chug, 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 chug,
Hello, and welcome back to the Wizard Staff. I'm your host, Guy.
And I'm Blake.
And we are two drunk novices who like to talk about EDH. We drink and swear, so you've been warned. Please drink responsibly when playing children's card games. Tonight, we're doing it. We're revisiting the age-old question, does mono white suck?
Oh boy. That's a big question.
It's been almost 100 episodes, and 5 years later, and we now have to say yes or no. It's like a big game show, you know? Like what's the verdict? Oh my goodness. Well, you'll find out. Stay tuned.
And you might be listening and thinking, Blake, Guy, why are you talking about this subject? Outlaws of Thunder Junction just came out. Why aren't you talking about the latest set? And you know what, listener? Fuck you. We don't want to talk about every single set that comes out because we don't want to get burnt out. That's why.
Wow, immediately insulting the audience 1 minute in. I love it.
You're welcome.
Okay, so just to kind of give some background, mono white has often been regarded as the most difficult color to build around due to probably the two biggest things for Commander, which are card draw and ramp. So white has often been viewed more as a supporting color rather than being something that can do its own stuff just by itself without having to kind of play into what I would say is stacks, which often is a kind of like no-no in EDH, or not that like it's not something that you can't play, but I would say that most of the community does not like stacks,
especially like the more casual end of Commander, which let's be honest is the majority of the Commander player base.
Correct. I mean, Blake and I think fall into more of the mid power level, like we want you to be able to play strong decks. We're not quite CEDH, but so our perspective is like white stacks is, you know, an acceptable thing, but still I think as a mono white player who has a mono white deck, I would also like some more help. So yeah. And okay, so around the end of 2019, we started to see a big shift in Magic design, or at least early talks of it, because more Commander decks were coming out. They had just made the announcement of, you know, 2020 was going to be the year of Commander. We were getting like 9 decks, Commander Legends. There were going to be some powerful white cards there designed specifically for Commander. And now it's been 5 years, 100 episodes. I don't even know like how many Commander decks there have been. There's certainly been multiple sets designed for Commander. So we just have to ask the question now, does mono white still suck? But before that, what are we drinking?
All right, for myself, I'm going to be honest, I started drinking about 3 hours ago. So,
oh God.
I am already pretty loaded. I am drinking a number of ciders from Locust Cider. There's one just like a block or two from my apartment. And so I've had a little bit of Juicy Peach. I've had a little bit of one or two others. And now I'm drinking, I think it's called Very Berry, and it's wonderful and fantastic, and I have like a whole growler for it. Like, I literally bought a growler because I'm like, I live next to like a cider house a block or two away. I'm gonna get a growler. That's the kind of person I am now.
Very nice.
Delicious. How about you, Guy? What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a white wine. I'm kind of going with the theme of Mono White, and it's also the type of drink I had when we did the episode 5 years ago. I should have re-listened and paid attention to specifically what white wine I was drinking to then kind of, you know, come back full circle.
You're fine.
But I got a brand that costs only $10, and let me tell you, that's about as... it tastes like it's $10. $10. It says it's lower in calories. I didn't even see that. Was not a factor into why I picked this.
You know, you're watching your carbs. It's called
Cloud 90. Oh, yeah. 90 calories per serving. Caveat, Pinot Grigio 2022. It's called Cloud 90. It's fine. It's what I just saw. The Cloud 90 intrigued me a little bit. So... yeah, that's what I'm drinking.
Hmm.
Okay. So, a recap of our previous episode, because I'm sure
none of you have
so many new listeners. Yeah. But if you're not going to go back and listen to that masterpiece, here are some of the main points that we wanted to cover in that episode. We talked about how one of the biggest things that Mono White needs is card draw. But it also needs card advantage. White does have the best removal, making it, you know, a great support color. Stacks is currently, or was, one of the best ways to play white, but not a lot of people did because of the social construct. And land destruction is frowned upon. I'd say that was a pretty big point because, you know, at the time, mono green could just go off, get a bunch of lands, and, you know, why couldn't I just destroy them all?
Dude, like, I swear to God, every 8 months on, like, Magic Twitter or Magic Reddit, like, they will talk about the fact that, like, oh my gosh, Mono Green is overpowered, like, we need some way to deal with it, and then someone's like, well, what about, like, Mono White's ability to do mass land destruction, and then everyone's like, oh my gosh, well, like, that just... helps the person who's already doing the, like, ridiculous ramping, and they just end up winning overall, and it's always a vicious cycle, and it's just a huge mess. And so I just wanted to add that in there.
Yeah. So, okay. Then, what are... So, the top mono-white commanders at the time were SRAM Senior Edificer, who is a zero CMC equipment, allowed you to draw cards... Avacyn, Angel of Hope, which focused on board wipes. Audric, Lunar Marshal, who was a keyword soup granter. Darien, King of Keldor, go wide tokens. Kemba, Ka Regent, is a Voltron. Nahiri, the Lithomancer, good stuff equipment. Balan, Wandering Knight, Voltron equipment. Dashar, Ancestor's Apostle, which was the highest level... power level mono white commander at the time, and then 8.5 tails, which was strategic protection granting, and God Eternal Oketra, who at that time also had only been out for maybe a couple months, because that was in War of the Spark.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So then, top 10 most played cards in mono white. Or the caveat being that these are the cards that see the most play that are only white, not necessarily the best mono-white cards. But you had, of course, Swords of Plowshare, Path to Exile, Enlightened Tutor, Sun Titan, Return to Dust, Wrath of God, Ghostly Prison, Smothering Tithe, Austere Command, and Oblivion Ring.
Which I'm willing to bet are the cards we'll see in the next following year at a high percentage as well.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these, I'd say, you know, tend to show up in commander decks. Like, Swords of Plowshare, Path to Exile, Sun Titan, Return to Dust, Ghostly Prison, Austere Command, Oblivion Ring. Those are kind of like staples to the WotC arsenal of, like, building a precon. Yeah. So they do tend to show up at a higher rate. Or be more accessible. And so, you know, we had to come to a conclusion as drunk as we were. But the conclusion we came to was, while Mono White does not have much of the card draw and ramp, it does have some particularly strong effects, like stacks and removal, that can make it a viable color to build around. However, these were frankly the only options that existed at the time, and people tended not to build them due to the lack of variety and negative social connotations that came with those play patterns. So while it may not have sucked, it did suck to play against Mono White, and is a feel-bad feeling. So we wanted WotC to explore new design space for White to support them in making interesting commanders without compromising the color pie, and possibly address the ramp and card advantage situations. So, you know, boiled that all down, and now, where are we now?
Modern day.
Yep, 5 years later. All right, so
it's 2024, one of the ways that right? I think
2024. Oh my god, for a moment I was like 2024, like no, it's something else, because in my head I was like thinking it was 2014. I thought you went back 5 years.
No, like 2019.
Clearly the alcohol's
getting to you.
Hitting me.
No, I meant like 2019 is like when the community started to have all these concerns, and it's now been 5 years later, and it's 2024, and we're all kind of doing this analysis episode, right?
Yes, yes, yes. I am drunk and just did not understand. My apologies. I'll do better.
You better.
It's already... Okay, so like, quick story too, but like... When I was re-listening to that episode from 5 years ago, I'm pretty sure there was a point that we got up, or at least I got up, halfway through the episode, went down to the Whole Foods that I lived above to buy a whole new bottle of wine, and then just drank that. So that's how drunk I got for that episode. So it's only kind of telling how this episode's going to go with how drunk I am now.
Listen, I did a lot of work. It's only been 12 minutes. I did a lot of work editing that episode to make you seem cohesive. A lot of people don't know that unless they're listening to this current episode. They'll never know.
They'll never know. And they'll never know because you'll totally edit that part out, of course.
No, I'll leave it in for this humor.
Okay, so 2024, we've established this. And the way that we wanted to approach it was basically, it's been 5 years. What are some of the ways that WotC has designed for White? Has this helped? And so, one of the big things is, again, card advantage. So, let's talk about Trouble in Pairs. Not for the plagiarism, but because it is a good example of a strong mono-white card, and especially because it comes from one of the more recent sets, sometime earlier in 2024. So, I'm going to read it real quick. It is 2 white-white enchantment. If an opponent would begin an extra turn, that player skips that turn instead. Whenever an opponent attacks you with 2 or more creatures, draws their second card each turn, or casts their second spell each turn, you draw a card. So, there's potential for you to draw up to 3 cards from one specific opponent during their turn for doing some of the most basic actions in a game. Like, attacking is pretty common, drawing cards is pretty common, casting more than one spell, especially in the late game. And it's also, I guess, not restrictive to, like, the opponent's turn. Like, you know, you could have a different opponent draw 2 cards during that turn.
Meaning, like, if an opponent is, like, a highly interactive instant speed deck and, like, is used to drawing cards on their opponent's turns, like, they, like, you can also draw on because of that?
Yeah, so this card is really, I think, a good example of the card advantage, because while your opponent is going down in cards, you are going up in cards. So, okay. So it does not necessarily stop the opponent from doing anything, unlike other cards like Defining Silence, Rule of Law, but it does make the opponents have to consider their actions, and is that worth a card to you to draw? So we have also seen other cards like Smuggler's Share, Mangara the Diplomat, Aerial Extortionist, who, you know, these are the ones that are like, if your opponent does something more than once, you get to draw a card, but it's not stopping them. And then you have a card like Rumor Gatherer, who you now have, if you have more than one creature enter the battlefield during your turn, you get to draw a card. So that also kind of nets you back a card for having played cards.
I will just add on to all the comments that you said that when Mangara the Diplomat came out, people were really hyped for it. And then they realized, oh, it doesn't actually draw you quite as many cards as you thought it would. And then all these years later, we get a card like Trouble in Paris. Again, not talking about all the plagiarism issues. But Trouble in Paris came out, and we're all like, okay, this sort of effect actually draws you the amount of cards per turn, per rotation of the table that like is actually meaningful in a commander game, to where like you don't fall behind, you actually stay at parity with all of your opponents, generally speaking, and it actually feels good to play the card.
Yeah, and I think it's another thing to say, like, this card would actively discourage you from playing some of the cards that are like quite salty, like Defining Silence and like Rule of Law.
Yeah.
So, because like that's like a negative synergy already. So I think there's already like also kind of a positive when thinking about deck building. Like, if you really do want to lean into like that stacks effects, sure, then you wouldn't run Trouble in Paris, but I feel like Trouble in Paris is now a good alternative that will also allow you to draw cards.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's the card advantage. What about actual strict card draw, though?
Yeah. So, we got a couple examples here. We got Cuddle Deal, which is a sorcery that says, like, each opponent can draw a card, then you draw a card for each opponent who drew this way. We had a new Teo Planeswalker, who had a plus to allow you and target opponent draw a card. You have Wedding Ring, which, you know, you give your opponent a copy, and then whenever they draw a card, you draw a card. Whenever they gain life, you gain life. And so, at least with these three examples, what is the common denominator between all of them?
You're asking me, of all people? How dare yes. you?
My co-host?
How dare
the
you?
The one I'm interacting with?
No! Fuck you. The actually hard draw cards?
Well, yes, they hard draw cards, but at the cost that also your opponent draws a card.
So that's like, yeah. So it's like, quote-unquote, symmetrical.
Yes. And so it's like, in addition to the card advantage where it's like, if your opponents are doing too much, they get to draw a card, these also will just allow you to just straight up draw cards, but you also get an opponent to draw cards. Which I feel like, in my opinion, is not as bad as some people make it seem to be, because you can use that as like a political type deal to say like, hey, I'm going to let you draw cards. Let me be in your good graces. I'm going to draw some cards. I won't touch you. So it's almost like encouraging you to make those kind of like alliances in a game as well, you know?
Yeah, where it's like encourage you to engage in the politics of Commander. But at the same time, there's ways to like print cards that are just like straight up good where like, I don't know, here's my stance. Like, there's enough politics in casual Commander. Just, like, play cards that do effects, and, like, there's gonna be enough politics in casual Commander. You don't even need to build them into the cards. You can if you want. Like, I'm not saying it's a bad feature. I'm just saying, like, there are different types of cards. Like, ones that are much, like, if you build, if you design, if you're at Wizards of the Coast and you design cards specifically for politics, like, it's much more Jimmy and that sort of super fringe, like, casual player. And there's ways to, like, play cards that just, like, straight up do things, and, like, there's gonna be politics in Commander no matter what, which is a bit more like Timmy Tammy. That's my perspective on things.
Okay. I mean, I guess this is, like, the one way that, or in WotC's mind, this was, like, one of the ways that they could give card draw without it being too color pie breaking, you know? Like, we didn't want them to just print up straight up divination in white, just because, you know, that's a color pie break.
And can I just say for the record, can I pause the, like, overall flow of this episode to say, like, I'm glad they didn't. I don't want WotC just, like, full stop, like, all right, we're gonna print the most overpowered bullshit in white to, like, now make it functional in Commander. No. And I'm willing to bet if I sat down with, like, the average Commander player, I could convince them, like, that's not the healthiest mentality to go about, like, printing for a card game either. Like, that's not what you want from, like, the designers of this game. You don't actually want them to print the most overpowered bullshit in the world. Like, you want them to slowly, incrementally, like, print more and more powerful cards, which is arguably what we've seen. Like I've said, like, prior example, Mangar the Diplomat wasn't powerful enough. Then a couple years later, they print something super strong, actually, called, like, Trouble in Pairs. Yeah? Am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong.
No, I completely agree. I like the diversity of, like, power level that they have also printed in a lot of these cards that we're going to talk about. It's like, we don't just want, like, the strongest effects all the time. Because, you know, that also kind of gets into the whole issue of, like, availability. But, you know, like, we want to see, like, a diverse range of cards. So, yeah. I think they've done a pretty good job with that.
Yeah, availability and accessibility are very nuanced conversations that I don't want to get into, like, right now. So let's keep on going.
Yep. Okay. I mean, would you like to lead this ramp catch-up part at all, Blake? I feel like I've done a lot of the...
Oh, sure. So, like, you know, as we've been playing Commander specifically, especially throughout the years, we're playing mono-white, and a lot of concerns have been raised, like, hey, like, let's look at mono-green decks, or even, like, Simic decks. Wow, they really ramp. They really just, like, are ahead on mana acceleration. It doesn't even have to be, like, green-based decks. It could be, like, other color identities that just can accelerate in terms of mana. Ramp, if it's another term that you prefer. And you look at your mono-white deck, and you're like, well, crap. Like, I can't really do that. I can't really keep pace with everybody else. So, WotC kind of heard that, and was like, all right, how do we stay in mono white, and how do we ramp slash, like, keep up with all the other color identities for Commander? And so they were like, all right, let's play some ramp slash catch up spells. And some common ones you may or may not have heard of is Archaeomancer's Map, which is, like, two and a white for, like, an artifact that says, when Archaeomancer's Map enters the battlefield, search your library for up to two basic planes, reveal them, put them into your hand, then shuffle. When a land enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, if that player controls more lands than you, you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. And, like, a number of people were really hyped about this card. I've seen it not as hyped. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I still play Land Tax, and years later, Land Tax is still a fucking amazing card. Y'all buy Land Tax, that's just my two cents. Then there's another more recent card called Claim Jumper that just came out in, like, Thunder Junction, which is a 2 and a white 3/3 Rabbit Mercenary with Vigilance that says, when Claim Jumper enters the battlefield, If an opponent controls more lands than you, you may search your library for a planes card and put it onto the battlefield tapped. Not just any planes, a planes. So it can get like your dual lands, it can get like any planes type of card, which is very powerful. Then, if an opponent controls more lands than you, repeat this process once. If you search your library this way, shuffle. So it can do it like basically twice. So that's kind of nice, right? And then there's other examples, such as Loyal Warhound, which again is another creature. It costs one and a white creature dog with vigilance. It's a 3/1 that says when it enters the battlefield, if an opponent controls more lands than you, search your library for a basic planes card, so not as overpowered as the Claim Jumper, but put it on the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. So that's sort of the more effect that you see. And I added this card recently to the notes because I played against it and it did a whole bunch of work because a lot of myself and my opponents played fetch lands. And so this is a Deep Gnome Terromancer. It is one and a white, so two mana value. Creature, Gnome Wizard. That's a 2/2 with flash. So you can flash it in like whenever it's convenient. And then it has, whenever one or more lands enter the battlefield under an opponent's control without being played, you may search your library for a planes card, any planes card. Put it on the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. Do this only once each turn. So it's still pretty powerful, especially in an average casual commander game. That was my personal experience against like a mono white deck that played this, and it kept pace against all of us doing fetchland bullshit. So I'm in favor of this card, at least in terms of the catch-up mechanic. But Guy, I've been rambling for a while. How do you feel about the mono white quote-unquote catch-up mechanic in Commander? Because I feel like there's been a lot of the community that has its critiques of this.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you actually brought up Land Tax and, you know, how good of a card that is. Because I do think that, yes, that is probably the best ramp catch-up card, but it does also come with that, like, high cost. Whereas the four cards you just talked about, they're on, like, a scale of, like, okay, Loyal Warhound is a fairly cheap card. Archaos Mancer's Map is becoming a more relatively cheap card. Claim Jumper is, you know, so-so. Deep Terromancer is kind of now getting back up into like the higher where like Land Tax is. So I do think that there's been a lot of options for mono white since, because, you know, we just talked about how we don't want them to print the best options all the time. Like, Land Tax is already the best option, at least at this time. So,
do you really,
you
think,
know,
that's
I
true?
Am personally.
You really think Land Tax is the best, like, mono white ramp spell?
Catch up. I mean, I kind of struggle to think.
It's hard because like, you can play it on turn one because it's a one drop, right? And, like, it gets you three basics if you're behind. It is, like, the ultimate catch up.
Yeah, like, it. Deep Gnome Terromancer is probably, like, very close, because that one's also like responsive.
Yeah,
it, you know, like you can flash it in, so like,
but it's also limited to once like per turn basically, where it's like, it's not gonna like, yeah, it's not like, oh, Deep Gnome Terromancer get three basics out of your land, like, library.
Well, you're only playing one of those basics per turn as well. Mm-hmm. You're not like, so,
but still,
yeah, between Deep Gnome Terromancer and Land Tax, like, those are the two best options, I guess. You can make an argument for each of them, but what I'm trying to get at is we have a lot of good options now. Mm-hmm. That's what we wanted, you know. Mm-hmm. With ramp and catch up being one of the, you know, biggest weaknesses that we talked about 5 years ago, I think white has gotten into a very good place with these types of effects, where if your opponents, and you have three of them most of the time, and, you know, green is a pretty common color to play, someone's more likely to have lands than you if you're especially playing in mono white. So you will probably have a chance to benefit from Loyal Warhound, Claim Jumper, Archaeomancer's map.
Alright, so I'm gonna play I'm gonna play Devil's Advocate for just a minute, then I promise we'll move on to the next category. I promise. So like you're playing mono white, as you do, you're playing like Avacyn or something. And you are playing against like a mono green commander. Like, is there any hope that you just don't like automatically lose in your casual like commander pod? Is that where we're at in 2024? Like, you don't just like give up hope, being like, this fucking like Yisan Wonders Bard mono green deck is just gonna like ramp out before I can do anything in my mono white Avacyn deck. I might as well concede. How do you feel?
I mean, I think it does kind of depend a little on the commander, but I personally would not just immediately give up, because, you know,
you're multiplayer. Hopefully you can convince like your other opponents to be like, hey, here's where I'm at, here's where you're at, here's this other deck, like, maybe we can kind of see how the first few turns turn out, and if somebody races ahead, maybe the three of us can gang up on them? Maybe?
Yeah, I mean, that's also totally valid, like, to rely on your opponents. And white, again, has, like, some of the best removal in Commander. So it's like, I'm not just going to give up once I see, like, I'm not going to immediately scoop. If you're playing mono green, like, yeah, I think we're in an especially better place than we were 5 years from today, that, like, yeah, I'm not going to feel discouraged, I guess. Maybe 5 years ago, yes, because, like, I just had Lantax.
Okay.
But, cool. You know, all these other options, I think, are pretty strong.
All right, so that all being said, we just talked about ramp and catching up in mono white. We're going to talk about a couple of other categories where we think mono white has improved and like been improved for like its color pie, like bends and strengths. And then at the very end, we're going to talk about like the total conclusions we have. So the next section we're going to move into, because I just talked about ramp and catching up, the next section we're going to move into is equipment and aura cheating. So you're cheating both the equipment and aura cost of things. Guy, do you want to talk about this section?
Yeah, I feel like this is a one that we've gotten to see more of, especially in the last 5 years. So I got three cards that I'm going to bring up, which is Vault 101 Birthday Party. This came out in the Fallout set. It's a saga, and it has a first chapter that is irrelevant to the situation. But then for chapter 2 and 3, it says you may put an aura or equipment card from your hand or graveyard onto the battlefield. If an equipment is put onto the battlefield this way, you may attach it to a creature you control. So you could basically do that twice. You got Forge Anew, which is 2 and a white enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, return target equipment card from your graveyard to the battlefield. As long as it's your turn, you may activate equip abilities anytime you could cast an instant. And the last thing it says is you may pay 0 rather than pay the equip cost of the first equip ability you activate during each of your turns. And then Armored Skyhunter, which is a 3 white creature cat knight flying. When Armored Skyhunter attacks, look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may put an aura or equipment card from among them onto the battlefield. If an equipment is put onto the battlefield this way, attach it to a creature you control, put the rest of them on the bottom of your library in a random order. So these have been really good examples of giving white the ability to cheat cards out. Like, I feel like, you know, we keep comparing white to green, and green often has like the best ways of cheating out big creatures. So this is good ways of being able to cheat out like big auras or big equipments. And on top of the equipment, cheating the equip cost, because oftentimes that's additional mana. Like, whenever I play World Slayer, I always have to try and factor in, it's not 5 mana, it's 10 mana, because I have to equip it to something if I'm going to get the effect. So it's like a 10 mana card.
Okay, so can I just say that, like,
yeah,
I agree with you, where WotC has been printing cards to consider cheating out auras and equipment, especially Forge Anew, which is an amazing, like, card to get around equipment. But we're comparing it to such an old card, such as, I'd argue, like, a mono-white equipment staple, such as Pure Steel Paladin, which is, for those who don't know, a white-white creature human knight 2/2 that says whenever equipment whenever an equipment enters the battlefield under your control, you draw a card, but more importantly, Metalcraft. So if you have like 3 or more equipment, it says equipment you control have equipped 0 as long as you control 3 or more artifacts. So it basically makes your equip cost 0. So the Pure Steel Paladin has been a card that's, I'm not going to say a mono white staple, but it's like a super important mono white card for most mono white decks. How do the more recent card designs since Pure Steel Paladin compare to Pure Steel Paladin? Do you think they're better? Do you think they're worse? Do you think they are expanding into new spaces that are better than what Pure Steel Paladin does? I want your thoughts, Guy.
So I think the strengths of Pure Steel Paladin is it is a cheap card.
Yes.
As in mana cost.
Yes.
It can net you cards for playing equipments, and it can cheat the mana cost.
It's such a good card. It's so easy to cast. Equip. It gives you card draw, actual card draw, and it's cheating mana cost in a way. So it's like, I'm not going to say a mono-white staple, but like it's one of the quintessential mono-white cards. So how has modern, current-day mono-white card design compare? Do you feel like it's grown and built upon that? Or do you feel like, oh, nothing's ever been printed better than this?
So with cards like Vault 101 and Forge Anew, the things that I like about these are that they can get equipment back from the graveyard, which that's pretty big, and these will then cheat the mana costs, which Pure Steel Paladin does on a condition, but these cards basically say that, you know, Forge Anew says you can do that once per turn, Vault 101 says, like, if when you return that, just attach it. So, you know, there's no condition that needs to be met, so in a way, that's a boon. With cards like Armored Sky Hunter, this one says, like, not only do you get to cheat the costs, but, you know, you get to look at the top 6 cards of your library, and then pick one from there, and put it onto the battlefield attached. So it's tough. I think this one, it's a tough question. I don't know if, like, any of these are necessarily better than Pure Steel Paladin, but I feel like most of them are on the same playing field. They just all have their, like, strengths and weaknesses that, you know, they can play to. I feel like you could put all of these into a mono-white equipment-type deck, and that's not the wrong thing to do,
right?
I guess.
I still feel like Pure Steel Paladin, even though through the test of time, it's still one of the, like, classic mono-white cards, especially if you lean more towards equipment.
Yes. Yes.
Alright, so let's...
And I mean... Sorry, the only thing I was going to say is, like, you know, it is a classic. I think it comes from, like, Mirrodin, so it's been around a long time. A lot of these new cards we haven't gotten to quite see. So, you know, if we do another episode in 5 years, who knows? We'll be like, ah, yes, Forge Anew, that's a classic, like, mono white card, like, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, so after talking about the equipment and aura cost reduction slash cheating of mana, we're going to move into the next category, which has arguably been one of mono white's strengths as of recent years, and that is going to be big token generation. So you might be thinking, like, okay, what does that actually mean? What does that actually look like? What does it mean for mono white big token generation? So I think one of the quintessential examples for this is the more recent card that came out called Mondrak Glory Dominus, which is 2 white-white, so 4 mana value. It is a legendary creature of Phyrexian Horror that came out in, like, what, More of the Machines, I believe?
It's All Will Be One.
All Will Be One. Thank you. So, like,
yeah.
A lot of these, like, a lot of these symbols kind of somewhat blur together. So, regardless, it is a legendary creature for Phyrexian Horror 4/4 that says, if one or more tokens would be created under your control, twice that many of those tokens are created instead. And then, in addition to that, it says, 1 and Phyrexian White, sacrifice 2 other artifacts and or creatures. Put an indestructible counter on Mondrak. So, it is essentially a 4-mana creature that can double your tokens, and it also has, especially in the Commander format where, like, you have start at 40 life, it's just 1 and 4 life to sacrifice a creature or an artifact to, like, make it indestructible. So it's basically an indestructible creature sack outlet, right? So, like, it's technically a quote-unquote mana gate where, like, at least you need 1 mana. But, like, in the Commander format, like, especially at the expense of, like, 4 life, like, it's not that bad. Like, pretty strong. Especially how, like, most token doublers are, like, X number of tokens plus an additional token. But this is straight up, like, twice as many. And so, another comparable example would be, like, a couple sets later called, I'm sorry again for all of you who are listening, I'm going to butcher this name, O'Hare Taj, Deepest Foundation, 4 white-white.
You nailed it.
Thank you.
I'm pretty sure you got that.
So it is, in contrast to 4 mana, it is 6 mana, legendary creature god, with vigilance, and it is a 6/6. So it's a much bigger baddie. And it says, if one or more creature tokens would be created under your control, 3 times that many of those tokens are created instead. If it dies, return it to the battlefield tapped and transformed under your owner's control. And it transforms basically into this land that you don't really want. You mostly want the creature side of tripling your mana tokens, where, like, across color identities, we've been seeing WotC experiment with tripling X, Y, or Z, and within the white color identity, we've been seeing WotC experiment with tripling tokens within the white color identity. So we've gone to doubling to tripling, and then let's think of one more example, and this one is going to be from the D&D set. It is the Ancient Gold Dragon. It is 5 white-white. So it is a 7-mana Elder Dragon. So it's quite a lot of mana. It's a big boy. It's a 7/10 with flying. And it says, whenever it deals combat damage to a player, roll a d20. You create a number of 1/1 blue fairy dragon creature tokens with flying equal to the result. So, like, on average, you're creating about 10 tokens every time you deal combat damage with this large creature, right? So, I feel like between these three creatures, they illustrate the point that WotC, over the years, is leaning more in towards, like, large creature token generation, especially with, like, not even necessarily Anthem effects. Like, I wouldn't even argue with that point. I just argue the fact that, like, WotC recognizes, like, why it just has to go wide and create a whole bunch of creature tokens and win that way. That's my stance. Because I've seen Mondrak, I've seen O'Hare talk the god, and not so much the Elder Dragon, but, like, I've seen these go wide creature token decks. What do you think, Guy?
I mean, it's crazy to me that, like, Mondrak came out at the beginning of 2023, and then O'Hare came out at the end of 2023, and it's like, we didn't even have time to, like, see how good the doubling effect was. We're just going now straight into tripling. But, no, yeah. I think white weenie type effects, which, you know, wanted to create a lot of, like, small creatures, like, that was, like, that was a thing, but I feel like not maybe the strongest, whereas now we've gotten these three cards, and then also we have, like, Ultek Matterweaver, which is a recent card, which says whenever you cast a creature spell, you can create a, you know, 1/1 colorless gnome creature token, or you can create a token that's a copy of target artifact token, and cards like Charismatic Conqueror, which is, like, 1 and a white vampire soldier, whenever an artifact or creature enters the battlefield untapped and under an opponent's control, they may tap it, and if they don't, you get to create a 1/1 white vampire creature token. So, like, in a lot of ways, like, you know, this is going back to, like, card advantage, where you play a card, you get to double it, you get to triple it. God forbid you have Oath out, and then it's, like, 6 times the amount of stuff.
Yeah, awesome. But,
yeah, this is a really great way of being able to play to one of White's previous strengths, but, you know, yeah, no, I love all these cards. These are pretty cool cards.
I've already seen Mondrak and O'Hare talk play, like, a huge role in Commander. And as you said, the smaller creatures that maybe aren't quite as over the top, go big, go wide, still have incremental huge value, like Ultek Matterweaver and Charismatic Conqueror, these 2 and 3 mana creatures, where, like, most of the time, based on, like, what you're doing or your opponents are doing, like, they're making a pretty wide board just based on the average Commander pod. And so they're doing that, plus, like, maybe if you said earlier you have Mondrak or O'Hare talk on the field, like, they're going so wide, like, they're getting you to the win just from sheer advantage of board state. Not necessarily card advantage or card draw, but just sheer raw board power.
It is crazy. So the next category we have is recursion. So this one is also not necessarily a new effect. Like, think Sun Titan, which was one of the most common printed white cards, because it was, like, in every mono white deck.
Yeah, I feel like, and even actually, if you, I feel like even if you're an old school Commander player who started back in, like, say, 2014, you know what Sun Titan does, and you know the importance that it had on, like, an average, like, casual Commander game, right? And so, like, you kind of,
yeah,
I feel like that's a good point for, like, the average Commander player to understand, like, the importance of, like, recursion and, like, quote-unquote carded advantage from the recursion mono-white standpoint.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of crazy to me. I didn't realize this, but so when I was listening to the episode we did 5 years ago,
yeah,
during that episode was when I bought my first Sun Titan. I was, like, kind of, like, raising my eyebrow, like, that's when I bought Sun Titan? Like, it took me, like, 2 to 3 years of playing mono white to realize I should be playing Sun Titan. Like, I don't now, but, like, I did then for a long time, and I do remember it being such an impactful card. Mm-hmm. It's very good.
I too was like, oh, Sun Titan's actually pretty good. and I got the Magic 2011 promo, which is like basically the first printing of Sun Titan.
Oh, okay. Nice.
But yeah, ever since I got it, I was like, oh damn, this does work. Even though it's like a big mana creature, if you can ramp, it's nice.
Yeah. And so, what I do appreciate is that, like, WotC was like, okay, that's something white can do, is, you know, get permanents back from the graveyard, so long as they meet a condition. So most of the time, it's like, if it has a mana value 3 or less. So we got cards like Against All the Odds, which is a 3 white sorcery, choose one or both, and exile a target artifact or creature you control, then return it to the battlefield under its owner's control. Return artifact or creature with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Then you got like Sarah Paragon, which is 2 white-white, creature angel, flying, and then once during each of your turns, you may play a land from your graveyard or cast a permanent spell with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard. If you do, it gains when the permanent is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, exile it, and you gain 2 life. And then this card came out just shortly before we started recording our previous episode, so we didn't quite get to know how impactful it would be, but it's Savine's Reclamation. It's 2 and a white sorcery. Return target permanent with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. If the spell is cast from a graveyard, you may copy the spell and you may choose new targets for the copy. And then it has flashback 4 and a white. So WotC certainly has been designing more into this design space to allow you to get cards back from the graveyard, which is, you know, an extension of your hand, mm-hmm. of, you know, offering you more resources. Kind of goes back to that card advantage. It's not necessarily, you know, it's extending to you the amount of cards you can play.
Yes. I will say that I'm glad we brought up the cards that we did. Like, Savine's Reclamation is a bit of a niche case situation where it's not necessarily played in mono-white decks. Where, like, if you look on the CDH spectrum, it's played along cards like Intuition and Underworld Breach to play within the CDH meta. And in that case, it's like, what, a white, blue, and a red card? So Jeskai at least, and it's often played in, like, other decks. So that being said, like, Savine's Reclamation, not necessarily a mono white card, quote unquote. But as you mentioned previously, Sarah Paragon, let's talk about that card. It's like definitely played within mono white decks, and like for a while it was pretty expensive, and like it's still like a 3 mana card in like its cheapest version. So like it's clearly, it's basically a quote unquote mini Sun Titan, which is what I've saw on like upon its release, and it's still, I don't know, maintains a 3 mana $3 like value on the secondary market. That's a good card to me. And like I feel like Resurrection / Recursion is like a low-key ability within white that WotC is slowly leaning more towards as the future goes forward, and I'm totally for it. Like I'm honestly really tired of mono black having the only ability to recur things.
Yeah, I like how they, this isn't just necessarily for mono white.
Guy, am I wrong? Is like, am I breaking the color pie for wanting white to recur things? Am I a piece of shit?
No, because it's not like they can recur anything. The fact that it's like mana value 3 or less, that's the restriction. And it does play into like, you know, what white is good at, but you know, we're not saying like any creature, there is still that restriction, which, you know, I feel like recursion is something that can happen in most of the colors, but with a certain restriction, and this white's restriction is it has to just be a mana value 3 or less.
Okay. So, that all being said, we've now talked about the recursion aspect of white that WotC has been leaning into. There's another category that WotC has been leaning into, and that would be Flash, aka like playing things at instant speed whenever you have priority. Guy, would you like to talk about some of the cards that Mono White has been gotten over, like, with the flash mechanic?
Yeah, this is pretty big because one of White's strengths from previous was, you know, we can say you can only play cards that you have cards like Rule of Law or Defining Silence, so you can only play one card per turn.
Yes.
Giving White the ability to flash things will allow you to also play on opponent's turns.
Yes.
And it also allows you to be reactive to what your opponents are doing. So two cards we've already talked about are like Deep Gnome Terramancer, which was the gnome wizard who could get you lands if your opponent was playing more than one land a turn. Archivist of Ogma, who was saying you could draw a card if your opponent searched their library for a card.
And gain a life.
And, yep, you would gain a life. We recently also got, like, Gandalf the White, who is 3WW legendary creature avatar wizard. He himself has flash and says you may cast legendary spells and artifact spells as though they had flash. So he kind of just gives that ability to a lot of cards. Two things that I think White already kind of leans into, which are legendary spells and artifacts. And then he also just kind of gives you a boost of, you know, if a legendary permanent or artifact entering the battlefield causes an ability to trigger, it triggers an additional time. And also we have the Wandering Emperor, who is the first planeswalker to have flash. 2WW flash, as long as she enters the battlefield this turn, you may activate her loyalty abilities anytime you could cast an instant. So, you know, this is also pretty reactive, where then you can choose from putting a +1/+1 counter on up to one target creature and it gains first strike. You can create a White Samurai creature token, or you can exile a tapped creature and gain 2 life, which, and most times you would do that in response to them kind of attacking. So this is also a really great card. So, yeah, just the ability to give White flash more and more often it is pretty nice because, you know, it's interaction in a way that it didn't quite have before. I think this really started to happen more with, I think, Kaldheim is when they start, when they announce that we would be seeing White would get more cards with flash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will say, generally speaking, planeswalkers in the commander format are not as powerful as planeswalkers in 1v1 formats. And so to see a planeswalker with flash, it makes it more powerful. That being said, we still don't see the Wander Emperor a whole lot in the commander format. That being said, it's better. It's quite better given that it has flash.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we got one more category, and then we'll go into top commanders and top White cards. So, Blake, take us home with this one.
So this one's a bit more difficult and nuanced. This is the quote-unquote White shifted cards. So, if you've been playing Magic the Gathering for a while, you know a lot of the cards, you know a lot of what they do, you know a lot of the colors that they are in. So, for example, there are a number of cards that exist in the Commander format that are now being shifted over into White. Alright, so we have Moonshaker's Cavalry, which is 5WW, which is 8 mana value for a creature Spirit Knight, which is a 6/6. That says when it enters the battlefield, creatures you control gain flying and get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control. This text might sound rather familiar to you if you've ever played a little green card called Crater of Behemoth. So,
Never heard of that card. Nope.
Well, you've been living under a rock, and I'm gonna kill you with that rock. blunt force trauma to the head. So, basically, you
have... Who are you? Cain or Abel?
Yeah, basically. Hashtag religious references. So, you basically create a super wide board with tokens or whatever creatures you want. It doesn't really matter. And the fact that this is, like, it's late into the game. You cast this for, like, 8-ish mana. And... Like, you basically buff up all your other creatures and give it pseudo-evasion in the form of flying, and then you just kill your opponents with it. It's basically Craterhoof Behemoth. So you're moving from white, or moving from green into white. So that's one example. Let's move to another example. This one is called Esper Sentinel. It is a single white mana for an artifact creature, human soldier. Whenever an opponent casts their first non-creature spell each turn, draw a card unless that player pays X, where X is Esper Sentinel's power, and it is a 1/1 creature. So, generally speaking, it is basically like a creature version that costs a single white mana for a Rhystic Study, where you have to constantly ask, do you pay the one? 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 Otherwise, you're going to draw a card. Now, it's obviously a bit more complex than that, but we're a podcast and we're trying to keep things simple here. So, it's basically a white-shifted version of Rhystic Study. We've already done an episode on this. Let's move on, because I have other things to talk about. So, next up we have Reprieve, which is one and a white. It's an instant that says, return target spell to its owner's hand. Draw a card. And this came... in, what was it, the Lord of the Rings set guy?
Yes.
Yes, and it's basically a remand, and if you play 1v1 formats, you know that remand is decently strong, and if you don't play in 1v1 formats, you're still like, holy crap, white generally never gets this effect in Commander. Holy crap, I want this no matter what. And so, it's basically another color shifter version from blue to white. And how do you think about this? Where, like, first card is green to white, the second card is blue to white, and the third card is blue to white. Do you feel like the color pie is being broken? Do you feel like WotC has absolutely lost their goddamn minds? Do you feel like the color pie doesn't mean a goddamn thing? Do you feel like we all just might, like, melt into nothingness?
No, and I mean, we have seen that before, where, you know, WotC has admitted to making mistakes. Like, I think a good example that we knew about prior to even our first episode that we did 5 years ago was, like, Generous Gifts, which was a green-shifted or a white-shifted Beast Within. So, we always knew that there were cards that could make that jump. I am surprised by some of the picks that they picked, like, Craterhoof Behemoth being a white card now, like,
yeah,
I like it, and I think that's great because it does play into the strengths that we've talked about from earlier with, like, white tokens. Like, you know, Craterhoof or Moonshaker now can be that, like, finisher for a game.
So, that all being said, guys, how do you feel about the fact that WotC has shifted two Commander controversial cards into white? The first being Craterhoof Behemoth from green to white, and Rhystic Study from blue to white. Do you feel like it's good for the format? It's... Do you feel like it's overpowered? Do you feel like white is now overpowered and, like, needs to be nerfed?
The Moonshaker Cavalry, I feel like, is not as big of a kind of shakeup to the format, only because it's an 8-mana card and has 3 white pips.
Yes.
So this is a good example where it's like, okay, this is probably only fitting into the niche categories it's meant for, mono white tokens.
Or more mid to casual decks. Like, yeah, even if you flicker this multiple times, you still need a lot of mana and a lot of setup.
Right.
Whereas Esper Sentinel, that's different.
Yeah, it's one mana. It does restrict to the fact that, like, non-creature spells, and it only triggers once per turn. So,
because correct me if I'm wrong, we're seeing Esper Sentinel in competitive EDH decks, right? Like the highest end of the format. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have no reason. I have no idea why you would not run it in a just any deck that can run white, I guess.
Yeah.
So, like, that doesn't feel healthy, whereas, like, Moonshaker feels fine. Reprieve feels fine.
Alright. So, we've talked about the various categories of mono white that have improved or changed over the years, the last 5 years, to be more specific. What about, like, we're going to step back a second and see the big picture again. What are, like, the commanders and the, like, top 10 99 cards looking like these days?
Yeah, so real quick, just gonna refresh everyone's memory. The top 10 mono-white commanders back in 2019 were SRAM, Senior Edificer, Avacyn, Angel of Hope, Audric, Lunik Marshall, Darien, King of Keldor, Kemba, Ka, Regent, Nahiri, the Lithomancer, Balan, Wandering Knight, Dishar, Ancestor's Apostle, Eight and a Half Tails, and God Eternal, Oketra. Now, we have Giada, Fawn of Hope, which is a angel type commander. That came out in 2022. Lightpaws, Emperor's Voice, 2022. It's an Order Matters Voltron type deck. We got Elish Norn, Mother of Machines, 2023, which doubles Enter the Battlefields and stops your opponents from having Enter the Battlefield type effects. You have Myrel, Shield of Argive, which is a Tokens Go Wide. Heliod, Sun Crowned, which is from 2020. It's an Artifact Life Gain, Walking Ballista combo, Triskelion type deck. It's now probably the best mono white deck in CEDH.
Yeah.
You still have Darien, King of Keldor, who was from our previous list. You have Preston the Vanisher, which is from 2022, which focuses on Enter the Battlefields and Blink type effects. Balan, Wandering Knight, who is also on the previous list. Adekumban, Resplendent Cathar, from 2021, Go Wide Tokens, and Avacyn, Angel of Hope, who is also on the previous list. So of these 10 that I just said, 7 of them are new from the last 5 years.
That's what I was going to say. Like, over the last 5 years, only 3 of them have remained on the top 10 list.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty good when you, you know, think about it, just because, like, we wanted more variety. I feel like most of these are pretty different from each other, and it just kind of, again, shows that WotC has been designing for white and creating stronger mono-white cards. Again, 7 out of 10 of these are from the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Last 4 years, really, because none of them are from 2019.
Yes. So overall, I'd say it's, like, it's a good thing, but if, like, you're a long-time player, you'd be like, oh, none of the, like, former mono white commanders are what they were. That's arguably a good thing, because they're trying to keep them power scaled up to the rest of the format. And I mean, you'd argue, like, as an eternal format, commander is eternally, like, power vacuumed, and, like, but still, you want all the colored entities more or less reasonably to be within the power scale of each other, right?
Yes, for sure. Before we move on to top 10 most played mono white cards, I know that you wanted to highlight a couple of these, like Elish Norn.
Yeah, I'd say, like, a couple of these are, like, obvious to where, like, obviously they're in the 99 of decks, but like, I feel like a number of them have had a significant impact. Like, I would like to talk about Elesh Noir and Mother of Machines in terms of the Commander community, where like, when it first came out, it was the first time I feel like a mono white card had been asked to be banned. Besides, you know, besides balance, besides all that bullshit. Like, let's be real here. Like, it's within the first time that Commander's existed within a format since its inception that, like, people were like, oh my gosh, ban this mono white card. And that's, I feel like that's something to say, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like the last time that happened was Draenith Magistrate.
Yes.
Back in 2020.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So it's been a while, for sure.
Did you know what happened?
Nothing.
We're fine. We're really? Fine with.
Or,
we're fine.
Yeah.
With, like, we're fine with Draenith Magistrate in the 99. We're fine with Elesh Noir and Mother of Machines in the 99. The community's just a bitch.
Yeah. Or at least, like, the more casual community. Because, like, I feel like those types of cards don't actually end up seeing play in those types of communities. So it's like, it's fine. You know?
Yeah.
Okay. So then, those were the top 10 mono white commanders. So what are the top 10 most played mono white cards? So again, the caveat is, it's not necessarily exclusive to mono white decks. These are just the cards that see the most play that are mono white. So Swords of Plowshare, Path to Exile, Generous Gift, Smothering Tithe. These are the top four. They were all on the previous list. Then we got newcomers like Esper Sentinel and Teferi's Protection, which I'll just note came out in 2017, but was not a part of the top 10 list from 2019, primarily because it had only seen one reprint in the form of a Judge promo at the time. But now it gets printed in multiple secret layers. It got reprinted in Commander Masters, so it's highly more accessible. So you can see it be played a lot more now.
Yeah. Teferi's Protection
so
used to be like a $60 card. And like people wanted, people wanted it in their like one or two color decks that had white in it. And like they just couldn't.
Yep. Number 7 is Enlightened Tutor. Number 8 is Farewell. And
which
it's possible this might be an outlier because it was included in a precon, and we know that those cards tend to be ranked higher in the list.
I just want to say Farewell has like a reasonable amount of discourse on like social media websites where it's like, this is just not a fun card to play because it's like an absolute true board wipe that like restarts the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, similar to Upheaval, but not quite to the same degree, obviously. But like, I'm trying to give like the nearest possible comparison.
Yeah. Then you got Austere Command and Ghostly Prison to round off the list at 9 and 10. So of the top 10 here, only 3 of these are new cards. Whereas in our mono white commanders, more of those were newer. Here, not as much. There are some notable mentions that did not make the top 10, which is Akroma's Will, which is at number 12. Flawless Maneuver, which is at 14. Draenor Magistrate is at 16. Felid Archtreat is 18. Archivist of Ogma is 25. And Mondrake Glory Diminis is 28. So, again, part of the reason that maybe some of these cards might not be cracking the top 10 are because of the accessibility issue. So, maybe in another 2 to 3 years, we could see some of these more recent cards that were designed for mono white make that list, that they do some kind of like big Commander Masters 2, or if they continue with like the, you know, Commander Spellbook things where they do a mono white one and then they add in some cards there. So yeah, there definitely might be a demand issue, Because, like, I think one of the examples we talked about last time was, like, Oblivion Ring made top 10 for 2019. But there are cards like Grasp of Fate, which is just a strictly better version of it, but it had less reprints.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Who knows what we'll see in, like, the next couple of years? And then, you know, we've also talked about, like, the Wandering Emperor, which is a relevant standard card at the time, at this time, but so that makes it, like, at a higher cost, but, you know, when it rotates out of standard, maybe it'll be more accessible and more people will play it. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. So, Guy, how do you feel about...
What are your thoughts?
How do you feel about, like, Mono White stacks cards?
So, I'd say there are two that have come out recently that we should highlight, which are Dranath Magistrate and Avant Interrupter. And these are strong stacks pieces that... Well, okay, Dranath Magistrate's been around for a while. I feel like it sees play in the power levels that, you know, welcome it. So it's not necessarily a casual card, yeah, but it is a card that sees play in, like, our type of play groups and or, like, CEDH. Avant Interrupter, which is a very, very new card. I'll read it real quick, which is 1 white-white, creature, bird, rogue, flash, flying. When it enters the battlefield, exile target spell, it becomes plotted. So, it may be cast as a sorcery on a later turn, without paying its mana costs. Spells your opponents cast from graveyards, or from exile cost 2 more to cast. So, in a way, this is like a counterspell, which is kind of cool.
Especially if it's against an instant.
It's not...
Because plot only allows you to play at sorcery speed.
Yeah, so this is a nice card because it can stop some of those counterspells, makes them pretty much irrelevant. Yeah, this one to me, I feel like, might see more play in the... Not as, like, high power. It will see play in high power, but, like, I feel like this isn't flat-out stopping you from not playing your commander, which is what Dranath Magistrate does, you know?
Yeah, I feel like if someone plays a Dranath Magistrate against you, oftentimes, if you're not, like, competitive EDH, you're like, oh my god.
Yeah. So, to kind of answer your question, I think we've seen a range of white stacks cards that, you know, can see play in the higher power level, but also can see play in the more or less casual pods. So it's kind of like we're getting a range, which is nice, like we have for a lot of these types of cards.
Alright, Guy. So, the big main question that we all actually have been leading to this entire hour and a half. Do we still think Mono White sucks? What do you think?
So, in my opinion, I think that we've come a long way since 2019 for Mono White. It was hard to see the road ahead, because oftentimes when we ask ourselves something in Magic, it's, you know, difficult because if we say something, it can take up to 2 to 3 years for it to be implemented into the game, because WotC needs that amount of time to get it into a product to then get into our hands. But now that we've been able to finally give WotC the, you know, time to listen to our feedback from 5 years ago, print some cards, I'd say that White has gained way more ways to draw cards, way more ways to catch up to other players while maintaining its presence as a dominant board wipe centric and removal color. So, you know, Farewell, Sunfallen, Final Showdown, gain good stacks pieces like Dranath Magistrate, the Avant Interrupter, and also get a pretty good range of commanders. So, you know, does it suck? I would say no. It does not suck. Is it still the worst color, maybe, but that's also because, like, you know, when you rank the colors,
there's gotta be one at the bottom.
It always, yeah, there's gotta be one at the bottom, but, like, if we were to look at the gap 5 years ago to the gap now, it's definitely smaller. What do you think? Like, would you say mono white sucks, or where have we come from?
Here's what I'll say. I don't want Wizards of the Coast to make the same mistake they did with Red, where the Commander community, for years, talked about how bad Mono Red was. And so they kept pushing it and pushing it, and eventually they came out with a card called Dockside Extortionist. Guy, are you familiar with a card called Dockside Extortionist?
I am very familiar with a card called Dockside Extortionist.
Alright, so it's arguably one of the most powerful cards in the entire Commander format, right? People are like, every couple of months, ask the Rules Committee or Commander Advisor Group to ban it, right? And so, I don't really want that to repeat with White, where, like, in more recent years, the Commander community has asked for mono-white cards to get more powerful. And then we got cards such as Esper Sentinel, and people were like, oh, ooh, ooh, okay, this is spicy. This is actually good. This is actually arguably too good. Don't give us too many of these. And so WotC's, like, chilled out since then, I'd argue. We've not got a more powerful card since Esper Sentinel. I think that's actually a good thing. And we've gotten more cards like Trouble in Pairs, again, ignoring the plagiaristic art, which is giving us more of what Mono White's weaknesses are. And I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I'm glad, I guess, that, you know, unlike Red, they did not print some kind of overly super powerful.
Oh, also card Underworld like Breach. Underworld Breach is a red card that's even more broken than equal or equally broken as Dockside Extortionist. So, like, please, WotC, for the love of God, do not create, like, an equal parallel to that. Please, 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 please.
Yeah, I think that, you know, from what we've gotten, I don't think that there's a white card that necessarily can match those two power levels. Like, we've gotten strong white cards, but we haven't gotten, like, that strong of white cards, if you know what I mean. So,
and I hope we never do.
Maybe one. Maybe, like, I'd take one.
Ooh, ooh, maybe one. Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna say no to a strong white card, like, generically good. But yeah, so I'd say, like, yeah, overall, I am much happier than I was 5 years ago with card designs, you know, the variety that Mono White has gotten. I think we did it. We cured Mono White. You and me, we did it.
Only us two, nobody else. Fuck everybody else.
Yep. Okay, well, I guess that's it. So, I don't know what we're going to bitch about now, you know?
The next set.
When Mono White's been fixed. Well, the next set is Modern Horizons 3, so maybe
God, we're going to get so much overpowered bullshit. Remember what happened the last time Modern Horizons 1 and 2 came out? Holy shit.
Oh, I mean, especially Modern Horizons 2. So, I guess we'll find out.
I'm excited.
All right. So, we are the Wizard Stop Podcast. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, and anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Make sure to leave a like and review. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at WizardStaff101. Send us an email at thewizardstaff101@gmail.com if you want to bitch and complain about how stupid we are. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have a great night. Peace.
Peace.